Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
It is 12 minutes past the hour of 8. I'm Howard Feldman. Well, Bill Kolbrenner, Ronit Eitan, a very good morning to you both. I'm glad we could take you a little bit earlier today because there's so much to talk about. How are you both? Quite the week it's been.
I think we're okay. I mean, Ronit, you actually slept through the night last night in Tel Aviv.
Spoiled.
I actually slept after a week of not sleeping. We didn't have, I mean, Be'er Sheva had missiles, but we didn't have missiles last night. So my family and I managed to get, I wouldn't say a good night's sleep because we're all anxious, but I slept. So I'm actually focused after this week of just being under tons of stress and just not being able to really function. I think that's the state of mind that we're at. But I'm trying to be positive. I slept, so.
Do you wake up in the morning thinking, oh my word, I think I must have missed an alert?
Yeah, I mean, I think we are a country that's, and I'm sure it's true for you as well, Howard, because you follow things so closely. We're just a country on permanent jet lag. Mm. And you know, I think part of the challenge for us is we're going through so much right now, and processing is almost impossible. I did have an interesting experience with my creative nonfiction class. You know, I teach at Bar-Ilan, and one of the things I teach is writing. And we had a workshop. Usually I devote the workshop to maybe reading somebody, I know, a great essay by James Baldwin, but I had them write a prompt. And it reminded me of after October 7th when Ronit and I had workshops together. The kinds of things that people were saying were so raw. And the extraordinary thing is there's a young woman in the class, and she lives, her grandmother lived in maybe Cologne, I think. And she said that her grandmother's building was missed by two or three buildings, and he had spent the afternoon before she came to class helping clean up the rubble. And I'm like, you know, that's an interesting thing to be doing before class. And what was especially amazing about it was so nonchalant. It was just like, this is what we do. This is just what we do, and we're continuing. I mean,
it's the blitz. It's London, and on top of it, we've got just had a shipload of 2,000 Israelis coming in from Cyprus by vessel. It's the circle of things. It's bizarre. There's something so strange about all of this. There's something nostalgic in a way. Or is that weird?
Nostalgic. I'm just sorry, Howard, I'm interviewing you again. Nostalgic how?
In the sense that this is almost taking, you know, we think of the war in terms of the Holocaust, but then there was the separate war that was happening in the UK. And, you know, I happen to love that reading about that period and how people dealt with what they dealt with. Very matter of fact, and they just got involved and they did what needed to be done. And at the same time, you had these, you know, ships being turned away from all sorts of places. It's just got a very 1940s vibe about this.
Yeah, except I would just say one thing that, you know, Ronit, you were telling me about Tel Aviv, that there are different kinds of miklat. So I think we're funnier than the British.
Oh, there's no doubt. So I want to talk about that. Sorry, Ronit, you tell me first about that, and then let's talk about that.
Well, I have to say that the mood, if I had to reflect, and just because I had a decent night of sleep, I can do that today. I think it just kind of, it's in between anxiousness and almost, I want to say, euphoria. It is, because in a way we're being, you know, we're doing something, we're being active into you know, this threat that was here. So, I mean, I don't think there are a lot of people who are against what we're doing in Iran, but also there's this layered, you know, anxiousness, because as a mother, you know, I'm extremely anxious, and my kids have been coming, you know, they're anxious as well. And, you know, speaking to other mothers, you see that, and you can see it everywhere, because I live in Tel Aviv, and we've been having sirens almost every day. I mean, I think 4 hours apart. So that's our reality now. And you know, it's most of the people left Tel Aviv. I don't know if people know this. There are not a lot of people in Tel Aviv. And you know how I know that is because my miklat is empty. It's empty.
So my son lives and daughter-in-law live in Ramat Gan, and by Saturday evening or Sunday morning, my daughter-in-law made the decision to go to her parents in Kharish. My son decided that he would still take the chances with the ballistic missiles then live with his in-laws for a few days, but that didn't last long, and he too and the dog went to left as well. And it's actually such a great relief as parents to know that they're not in the Ramat Gan area, which is just been hammered. I mean, they on Friday evening were extremely close to the first barrage and to the first hit. It's very unnerving.
Friday was the scariest Friday night. I mean, the you know it's I mean usually it's our reality in the past, you know, since October 7, it's missiles and stuff, but it's once in a while the Houthis, the Yemen, you know, we go downstairs, we almost do, you know, our kids a favor that we do that to them. We clad, we wait, and then we come up. Friday, the booms were so scary, and the whole building shook. And we thought, you know, it was so close. And my kids looked at one another and they were like, what is happening? And we had to just kind of calm them down. But it just, you know, Friday was when everything kind of clicked and we were like, okay, the rules have changed. This is really, really different. And since then, like you said, most people just left. You know, I think the people who my parents live in Tel Aviv, so there was just no point in me actually, you know, moving to their house. And it's even closer to the central of Tel Aviv. So it's like, okay, it's they should come to me, you know, instead of me going to them. But whatever. And it's the single people who look at this experience almost like a Tinder-like kind of, because, you know, young people, they don't care about their, you know, they think they're invisible. They go to their own kind of miklats. They're bring their guitars, they're singing,
But the
whatever. Like
scene,
I'd shoot
Howard, but
them.
the scene. There's a
I would
miklat
shoot
scene in
them if
Tel
they
Aviv.
were in my miklat. Like, please, let's not sing. Let's just, you know, be very
Okay,
quiet
so
and
this
listen.
was, you've taken me to exactly where I wanted to go. And I'll tell you what it is. I was a little bit sneaky with listeners a little bit earlier today because I've got this theory that I wanted to test. And I asked them, what are the songs of this conflict that you associate with it? And because have a theory that after October 7th, we were singing songs like Achenu, Arim Roshi. We were singing songs that spoke to our souls and to our connection and all sorts of things. This time, this sector of the conflict, I'm seeing a very different beat to the music. I'm seeing music being more defiant, celebratory, through the missiles than I am music of comfort songs as we connect and we hold on to each other. Give me your observations, both of you.
Well, I can I disagree?
Of course, I don't expect everybody to agree.
So I'm going to tell you, like after October 7th, there was the Harbo Darbo. Do you know that song, Harbo Darbo, by Ness and Stilla? Oh.
How do we not know that? How do well to just hum a few tunes if unless it's
Where's
horrific.
that, Howard? Why
You
don't you know
this
that?
is what is it called?
Harbo Vidarbo. So it's Ness and Stilla. It's two young rappers.
Ness
Who,
and
by the
Stilla.
way, can't go to the United States because of that song, and they have a checklist in that song of the terrorists that we have to kill. So it was just that was a defining kind of. It came out, I think, a month after October 7th, and it was you know the young people just adored that song. There was power to it. It was like, you know, because we were feeling very down, obviously. And they came out with this song, and it was almost like, you know, in your face, we will not. I mean, it's not very subtle.
All right. Well, subtlety's never been an Israeli gift.
But it was
Thank you, Howard.
resistance. Sorry. We're all being honest.
Was, you know, and then there's the Eyal Golan song.
Yes.
I'm not a big fan of him.
Yes, of course. Right.
And, you know, there were, you know, I'm a more of a Boris Sakharov, you know, and I love him. So, I mean, his songs are, they're that kind of comfort and very Israeli-like in tone. So that was my soundtrack. Okay. I think now we're less, I don't know if it's because we feel like we're actually being, you know, active and we see our success over there. I think now we're kind of pushing for unity and we're saying, okay, we're taking care of a threat. You know, it's not like October 7th when we were attacked and it came out of nowhere. Now we're actually being active. Now let's just mend whatever we have here and just be, you know, more united. But so I think the songs now are much more comfort, much more, you know, it's let's just kind of regroup, remember who we are, remember that we're in the Middle East, this is the language that we have to speak, whatever. So I mean, I think that's the soundtrack, but maybe it's only because I'm in Tel Aviv. Maybe in Jerusalem it's
Well, I'm not sure it is or isn't, but just as a matter of interest, that song which I've just looked up has a very big E next to it, which means we're not playing it on radio. So that's exactly why we would not
fight. It was, I think, I mean, that song, it's very interesting. I wish somebody would write a paper about that song because it was the lowest point in Israel, like mood, like we felt like we're going to be annihilated. I mean, I vividly remember, like, you know, hearing from Lebanon, they're going to attack, they're going to attack from Syria. And we just felt completely, like, you know, and talk about anxiety. We just, you know, it was the time where nothing was organized here. And that song came out. And like I said, it isn't very subtle. It isn't very, it's just, you know, we're doing stuff and we're going to come for you. And I think a lot of young people just kind of had their head.
It resonated for them. Bill, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, listen, my reference points, the first song I thought was Bob Dylan's Knock, Knock, Knocking on Heaven's Door, which is probably not the most appropriate song to know.
No, it's like, see, I'm alive, yeah.
And just so Ronit knows, we are not in Jerusalem singing Hasidic songs.
I was just going to say, when was the last time Ronit went to Jerusalem? Because I think her view of Jerusalem might be a little dated.
Yeah, like matter and antimatter coming together, so it's a very...
Do you guys meet somewhere in Beit Shemesh? What? Yeah?
They really, you know, Professor Colburn has been sleeping okay in the past week.
Yes.
Okay, so...
Yes. Exactly. It's true. No bitterness coming through there at all. Fine. No issue.
Yeah, so, I mean, Jerusalem... I mean, I think yesterday morning, and I'm excited to hear about the optimism. I think yesterday morning, especially because we had this idea that things were getting back to normal. Because, of course, you know, the missiles seemed to be dwindling, and we were almost getting to that Houthi space, I thought. And then yesterday morning, because the home front command had said, "Here, it's okay to go back to work, provided that you have a safe space someplace at work." And at 8:30 in the morning, of course, we were met by this news of this hospital being bombed. And, you know, Howard, I'm sure I know that you always put things together. And I just remembered, for me, the biggest memory was right after the conflict began. And remember it was the beginning of the major blood libels against us. It was a Saturday night. I remember it was after Shabbat. And we heard that Israel had bombed the hospital in Gaza. And 500 people had been killed.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing it on Al Jazeera the moment it was reported. And from that moment on, every major news source picked it up. Not even by Sunday morning. I think by Monday morning or even later, we found out that the missile that supposedly had hit the hospital did not hit the hospital. Mm-hmm. That supposedly was sent by Israel was not sent by Israel. It was sent by Hamas. And the 30 people who were killed, were killed by Hamas. Mm. But what happened is, I'm sure you recall, was it didn't make a difference. The facts at that point, that was the beginning where we thought facts do not make a difference. And now we see in the world, and I think this is what makes me want to catch my breath, is to see, oh, now the Israelis know. Now Jill Stein, the great presidential candidate, the crazy person on the left in America, said now once the Israelis get a whiff of what they're inflicting on Gaza, well, now we know. So it's so strange to see, you know, vengeance is mine. That's, I think, in Numbers, you know, God says. And now we see all these, you know, we are the world peaceniks saying, oh, now you're getting what you what's coming to you. To me, that's that just gives me a lot of pause. It makes me want to once again. Oh,
what's interesting is
time I'm a fellow. I'm sorry.
No, you carry on at the same time.
I'm a fellow at an institute called Van Leer Institute, which is the most left-wing institute in all of Israel. And one of the librarian there received a letter saying, I will no longer associate myself with the Van Leer Institute because of the starvation of Palestinians and the killing of babies in Gaza. And, you know, none of this has anything to do really with academia or what's happening in Israel. It's just virtue signaling. And that's what we're seeing. And it's so strange, Howard, because who supports Iran? I mean, it's crazy.
Well, that's what I was going to say to you, is you can't. And which is why they've shapeshifted. And the shapeshifting is now twofold. One is America should not get involved in this war. It's got nothing to do with America. That's argument number one. And then you've got the Tucker Carlson argument, which is biblical Israel is not modern Israel. And that's going to be the next. And I can tell you, watch the space. That is going to be the next push. There are two pushes at the moment. One is America has got nothing. You know, Iran is not the enemy of America, even though it is. And the second one is modern Israel is not biblical Israel.
How is that? I mean, it's interesting that both of those critiques are coming from the right, and that Trump is he doesn't really care about MAGA. He cares about it insofar that it's good for him. And now he senses that he might be able to come into a war and declare victory. I mean, in the middle of the war, he was saying American know-how, American.
Look, I think he's played this brilliantly. He's, as I was saying to listeners earlier, your most vulnerable part of a war is the beginning of the war. He allowed Israel to do that. If it went wrong, it was Israel. Only when he started seeing success, he switched to using the we pronoun. And suddenly it was us. We were doing this. Now there's pushback. He's saying, let's wait 2 weeks to see. But either way, he wins it, because even if Israel is successful without him, they're not successful without him. It was American know-how. It was our weapons. It was our expertise. If he comes into it, it's because he chooses to. So either and if it doesn't work, it was all Israel. He didn't get involved.
What's the biblical Israel argument, Howard? That I mean, that's usually coming from the left.
So it's now, so Tucker Carlson has launched that call to action. That call to action says that the phrase in Genesis 12:3, whatever it is, that those who bless Israel will be blessed. He said it in the interview with Ted Cruz. Does that mean I need to bless Netanyahu? In other words, I don't think the Bible's telling me that. You know, this is not the same Israel as then. So it's a very, and Candace Owen has already started parroting that. We're going to see a lot of it in my view.
Essentially separating the Bible from the Jewish people.
Yes, it's
basically
correct, exactly. Which has been long an attempt anyway. You know, we're not Jews, we are something else. I can never remember who we are. It depends on the week. But either way, we are over time. And no matter how much time we give it, we always seem to run out of time, because that's just the way it is. Professor Bill Kolbrenner, Ronit Eitan, thank you as always. Just stay safe. Keep playing the music. Bill, your Hasidic music. Ronit, your modern defined music. As long as everybody's safe, then it's good. It is 8:31. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 Chai FM. Good morning.